Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles, and investment ideas from Tom, me, and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters.
In the markets this week, shares edge further into record territory. The focus shifts from interest rates to earnings, while here in the UK, all eyes are on the budget. Well, shares are continuing to move higher as weak economic data at the end of last week seemed to reduce the need for interest rates to stay higher for longer to calm still above target inflation. That news brought to a close a positive month for investors all around the world in February, a month that saw many of the main indices hit new highs. The US continues to be a key driver, not least because it accounts for 60% of the value of global shares, but it's been well supported elsewhere. The S&P 500 rose by 4.3% in the month to the 1st of March, while the NASDAQ was up 5.5% over the same period. Meanwhile, Japan soared by 9.4% in the month, closely followed by recent underperformer China, up 9.3%. In Europe too, shares captured what might be considered a good year's growth in just a few weeks. Italy was 9% up on the month, and France rose by 7%. The NASDAQ index is now above 16,000, compared with around 10,000 at the market low in October 2022. The tech-heavy index continues to be driven by a handful of shares, including Nvidia, which successfully navigated its recent results announcement to consolidate a 65% gain just since the start of the year. The broader S&P 500, itself dominated by a small number of growth stocks, ended the week at 5,120, where it's already exceeded the consensus forecast for its N24 value of 5,100. That target was in turn only put in place in December after strategists raised their forecasts in the wake of the Santa rally in the run-up to Christmas. The further gains last week came as consumer sentiment and manufacturing activity weakened in February. While that sounds like a negative for the stock market, it's eased concerns about a possible rebound in inflation, which would make it hard for the Federal Reserve to deliver the interest rate cuts that the market has priced in. Last week's inflation data showed an increase in the so-called supercore rate that the Fed watches closely. This is a measure that strips out volatile measures like energy and food and also disregards what's happening to house prices. It's a measure of the underlying inflationary pressures in the economy. Although interest rates continue to be a key driver of stock markets, there are growing signs that investors are turning their attention to corporate earnings as the main driver of share prices. Following a strong fourth quarter earnings season, now pretty much complete, around three quarters of companies have beaten estimates by an average of just over 7%. As importantly, the estimates for full year earnings growth have risen strongly from plus 1% at the start of earnings season to plus 8% now. That has gone a long way to justifying the market's valuation, which by historic standards is now quite stretched. The trailing price earnings ratio, which compares share prices to the last 12 months' earnings, stands at 23. While the equivalent based on expected earnings over the next year is 21. That looks punchy on the basis of comparable valuations in the bond market, for example, which suggest a fair valuation might be closer to 16 times earnings. So it's important that company results continue to beat expectations. But one positive about the market at the moment is that the rally does seem to be broadening out from the so-called Magnificent Seven to the wider market. The equal-weighted S&P 500 is finally back to its 2022 peak, sometime after the market capitalization-weighted index broke through into new territory on the back of the stellar performance of the biggest companies. Another positive is that looking back through the history of bull markets, the current rally remains relatively modest. Shares have risen by around 46% from their recent low. Often, the market has doubled during these kinds of upswings. Also, with only a quarter of shares beating the performance of the index as a whole, this remains a narrow bull market. A broadening out of the rally will underpin it. Over on this side of the Atlantic, the market is not the main concern for investors this week. Rather, all eyes are focused on Wednesday's budget, which could be the last big set-piece fiscal statement before the next general election. Realistically, there could still be an autumn statement before we go to the polls, but this is one of the last opportunities for the Chancellor to offer voters some pre-election cheer. Unfortunately for him and the rest of the governing Conservative Party, there's hardly any scope for the Chancellor to produce any real sweeteners for voters if he's also to stick to his self-imposed fiscal rule of ensuring that the national debt is falling as a proportion of the economy in 5 years' time. According to calculations by the independent fiscal watchdog, the Office for Budget Responsibility, the Chancellor might only have about £13 billion of headroom to fund the tax cuts he says he's philosophically wedded to. With a penny off the headline rate of income tax costing £7 billion and the same cut in the national insurance rate costing £5 billion, that suggests anything more generous will require implausible spending cuts in the next parliament. No wonder the Chancellor admitted when interviewed over the weekend that the forecasts have moved against us. From an investment perspective, one of the key pieces of speculation is around a measure that's been dubbed the Great British ISA. This refers to a possible extension of the current £20,000 annual individual savings account allowance to encourage investment in UK companies and so to support the London market, which in recent years has become increasingly uncompetitive compared with its counterpart in the more highly valued US. There are mixed views on the merit of a further £5,000 allowance restricted to UK-listed companies. While several countries do incentivise investment in their own domestic markets, critics, Fidelity included, think that there are better ways to support the UK stock market, such as changes in the tax framework for investors. A reduction in stamp duty on equity transactions and simplification of the capital gains tax regime have been proposed. Another important stock market to be in focus this week will be China's, as the annual National People's Congress kicks off. Although the Congress is something of a rubber stamp affair, it's seen as an important forum for the government to provide hints about future policy, including whether or not it will step up stimulus of the country's sluggish economy. Expectations are low, despite a mounting list of problems that include a deflating property bubble, deflationary pressures generally, and flagging investor confidence. The Chinese market has been one of the worst in the world in recent years, the driving force behind the underperformance of the world's emerging markets. Strip China out, and emerging markets are actually not far off their 2021 peak, but include it, and emerging markets are back at the levels they traded at during the financial crisis in 2008. One of the next big events on investors' radars this year will be the US presidential election, which is unfolding in predictable fashion as the extended process to pick the two main parties' candidates proceeds. Despite Republican Nikki Haley winning her first nominating contest in Washington, D.C. at the weekend, Donald Trump remains the overwhelming favourite to win the Republican nomination, and as it stands currently, to also narrowly beat incumbent Joe Biden in November. That's on the basis of a Wall Street Journal poll giving Trump 47% over Biden's 45% in what is likely to be a close and bitterly contested election later in the year. Now, it's hard to draw many investment-related conclusions from US elections. Not only does the colour of the winning party not have a clear impact on market performance after an election, the state of the market in the run-up to the vote is also ambiguous when it comes to predicting who will win. The obvious things to look at are the level of the market and the current president's approval ratings. This year, those are contradictory because the market is riding high while the president is unpopular. That was also the setup 4 years ago, when by election time, the market had fully recovered from COVID, but Donald Trump was unpopular and he lost the election. The bottom line is that there's no formula. Nixon was re-elected with good ratings, but a terrible market. Truman had poor ratings, but a booming market, and he was not re-elected. The only real trend we can really glean from history is that the market tends to perform better in the 2 years running up to an election than in the two that follow. After a strong market last year and a good start to this, that hints at a positive year in the market. But ultimately, earnings, valuations, and monetary policy are likely to be the bigger influences.
Please note that the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. Investors should note that the views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. This information is not a personal recommendation for any particular investment. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to one of Fidelity's advisors or an authorized financial advisor of your choice. Overseas investments will be affected by movements in currency exchange rates, and investments in emerging markets can be more volatile than other more developed markets. Reference to the specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances and all tax rules may change in the future. Withdrawals from a pension product may not be possible until you reach age 55, 57 from 2028. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. This podcast is meant only for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation.